Welcome to the Cato Weekly Digest for the week of July 6, July 12, 2026. And Layla, I have to say, this was one of the more uncomfortable weeks to read.
Uncomfortable how? Like, the numbers are bad uncomfortable? Or the numbers look fine and that's the problem uncomfortable?
The second one. Definitely the second one. So here's the headline that grabbed me. Global AI sales outside China reportedly hit $25 billion, against an estimated $21 billion in quarterly depreciation for data centers and chips.
And people are reading that as validation.
Right, and I get why. Revenue above depreciation sounds like a green light. But here's the trap. Depreciation alone eats more than two-thirds of that revenue. Before you add power, labor, financing, land, cooling, operations, the whole stack.
So the business is running on margin that may not actually exist yet?
My read is yes, or at least the margin is much thinner than the top line number implies.
And this is the framing I keep coming back to. What I call the landlord's bet, the wager that AI's value lives in physical infrastructure and operational control, not just in model intelligence. Okay, that bet advanced this week, but it also got more dangerous.
Say more on the dangerous part.
Railroads, electricity, fiber, cloud, even airlines, all of them created enormous downstream value, but the capacity builders themselves often fought for thin returns. AI may rhyme with that pattern more than software investors want to admit.
The profit pool doesn't live where the build-out lives. That's the core tension.
Exactly, and the build-out is getting very, very physical.
Oh, the physical layer was wild this week. Lancium's Stargate-linked Texas power campuses drew minority stake interest, because gigawatt-scale power access is now treated as strategic AI infrastructure.
Gigawatt-scale, not megawatt, gigawatt.
Right. And then Samsung reportedly pushed another DRAM price increase after already hiking earlier, because data centers are absorbing available supply. Memory is becoming a frontline constraint.
And then you've got Allo Atomics reaching criticality, a company called American Turbine coming out of stealth to sell small gas turbines directly to data centers.
Which makes AI power look like a speed race as much as a clean energy race. Like, we'll take nuclear and gas turbines. Just give us electrons.
And then, okay, my favorite detail of the week, Toto.
The toilet company.
The toilet company? Surfaced as an AI supply chain node because advanced semiconductor manufacturing depends on Toto's ultra-pure water and precision ceramics. Nobody puts that on a keynote slide.
That's a real, the AI industrial complex includes bathroom fixtures moment.
It perfectly illustrates what AI infrastructure actually means now. Not one supply chain, 1,000 brittle dependencies. And when one of those breaks, anywhere in the stack, the whole thing slows.
Okay, so here's where I push back a little. Because the best counter argument is also real. Infrastructure bottlenecks can ease, model efficiency can improve, token prices can fall faster than workloads grow, if that happens.
Then today's power deals, memory premiums, and gas turbines look like expensive insurance against a bottleneck that had a short half-life.
Right, and this is what you call...
the half-life of scarcity. The warning that a real bottleneck can lose its pricing power once capital and substitution arrive. It happened in storage, in bandwidth, in cloud compute.
So the question is, does AI scarcity have a long half-life or a short one?
I honestly don't know. My read is the power constraint is stickier than the memory constraint because permitting and grid interconnection move slower than chip production. But I hold that loosely.
Fair. Now, finance spent the week acting like all of this is already bankable, and that part genuinely surprised me.
The capital structures are getting creative.
Creative is one word. AI data center borrowers are using Rule 144A structures, which lets them raise public market scale money with narrower disclosure. And Meta's $27 billion Bain A deal with Blue Owl has basically become the template for funding these projects through private placements.
$27 billion, structured privately. That is a large bet to place outside the full light of public disclosure.
And then Bank of America extended OpenAI a $520 million credit line. Nscale closed $900 million of debt financing. Some deals are reportedly funding 90 to 95% of project cost.
Which means the utilization bet is leveraged. The question isn't whether AI demand exists. It's whether demand arrives on the right schedule, at the right price, with enough margin to pay everyone in the stack.
And everyone in the stack is a long list this week.
Very long. Power company, memory supplier, debt service, operations team, audit function, the model vendor, the software it replaces. That's before you talk about the customer.
Okay, let's move to governance, because this one shifted for me this week. The framing I had going in was, governance is the wrapper around the product. What I saw coming out was, governance is the product.
Permission is a feature. Audit is a feature. Provenance is a feature. Refusal routing is a feature. Data policy is a feature.
Claude Fable's comeback was the cleanest example. The reported setup used jailbreak classifiers and fallback routing. Not a simple yes or no refusal path. That's runtime architecture, not an ethics policy.
And Claude Science made the same move in a scientific domain. Agents, connectors, native execution, provenance, reviewer checks, all packaged into a reproducible workflow.
What I call the capture ledger, the record system around machine work. Who meters it, authorizes it, logs it, finances it, and compares it against human cost. That is becoming real product architecture.
Not a compliance wrapper, the actual layer where work becomes inspectable.
And the commercial side caught up fast. HubSpot, tell me your read on that one.
HubSpot reversed an AI data sharing plan after customers push back. And what's interesting is why customers push back. CRM records aren't vendor training exhaust, they're competitive capital. Customers don't want to fund a shared enrichment pool that their competitors also access.
So trust failure became a product recall, basically?
Effectively. And publishers are considering opting out of Google search because answers are turning the old link for content bargain into traffic extraction. The search deal was, I give you my content, you send me readers. AI answers break that deal.
Illinois added annual third-party audits to its AI transparency rules. The UN AI panel is trying to build public evidence infrastructure. And then?
Apple sued OpenAI.
Apple sued OpenAI, alleging trade secret theft tied to consumer AI devices. And this is the number that caught my eye. The recruitment of more than 400 former Apple employees.
400, that's not a few strategic hires. That is a sustained talent extraction.
And even if the facts shift in court, the strategic lesson is hard to argue with. When AI moves into hardware, memory, identity, and always-on interfaces, IP trust is not paperwork. It's a pre-launch input.
Cato, here's where I'd push on your governance framing, though. The counter-argument is that governance commoditizes. Logs, permissions, audit trails, secrets managers, model routers, these become table stakes. buyers can swap control layers. The margin compresses.
I've thought about that. And I think plumbing is valuable when every building needs it and failure floods the floor. The margin won't live in generic audit logs. It'll live where governance touches workflow. Who has context? Who owns the data? Who can approve the action? Who sees the trace? Who gets blamed?
A log inside a workflow that controls who can act and what data can move. That's not plumbing. That's power with a timestamp.
Power with a timestamp. I'm using that.
Go ahead, now, model race. Because that's where things got genuinely complicated this week.
The old question was simple. Who has the best frontier model? The new question has at least six parts.
GPT 5.6 was the clearest signal. OpenAI didn't launch one undifferentiated flagship. They launched Sol, Terra, and Luna, a capability cost latency ladder.
Sol at the top, presumably most capable. Terra and Luna pitched against Claude on enterprise task math. Performance, speed, output, token use, estimated cost per completed task.
That is the cloud pricing playbook arriving at the model layer. You don't sell the best, you sell the right tier for the workload.
And Grok 4.5 made the same point from a different direction. Pitched as an Opus class workhorse for coding. With cache discounts, long context premiums, a 500,000 token context window, and cursor co-training.
Coding agents consume tokens like cloud workloads, so that pricing structure actually matters operationally.
And then the sovereignty games got stranger. Beijing reportedly considered limited H200 purchases because local supply couldn't fully meet demand, even under U.S. export restrictions.
JPU was exploring custom chips because GLM demand was straining compute access. Tencent released Hi3 with serving support and hardware validation. Beijing weighed overseas limits on top Chinese models.
So sovereignty is messy in practice. Governments want control. Companies want capacity. Buyers want leverage. Export policy wants a clean line. Real systems route around it through chips, clouds, transit hubs, custom silicon.
And the commodity inference thesis, Narayanan and Kapoor's argument, is that low switching costs, similar frontier models, and fast token price movement push inference toward marginal cost. Their escape route is vertical integration, embedded deployment, switching costs, workflow lock-in.
The counter is that the frontier could widen again. If one lab opens a large capability gap, all the ladder and workflow talk becomes leverage on top of model quality, not a replacement for it.
But this week's evidence points the other way. More tiers, more pricing nuance, more workflow packaging, more sovereign access games, more hardware hedges. The race is no longer one leaderboard.
It's a market map. Okay, SaaSmageddon, because I want to talk about Greenleaf.
Greenleaf Management reportedly replaced Salesforce with an internal app built using Claude Code and Replit, saving about $100,000 a year, paying roughly $300 a month to maintain it.
That is not a Fortune 500 IT transformation. That is a small buyer saying, I know my own workflow better than the vendor does, and now I can rebuild enough of it to stop paying rent.
And Sanofi is the bigger company version, cutting ServiceNow usage with Claude Code and Elementum agents, while going deeper with SAP, so AI spend forces every old software vendor to rebid for its seat.
The sharper claim isn't AI replaces SaaS. That's too broad. The sharper claim is that AI makes software categories less stable. A CRM record can become training data. A ticketing system can become an agent queue. A coding tool can become a work platform.
And Microsoft's internal transformation memo showed a dominant software company reorganizing while its numbers still looked strong. That's actually the useful signal. Serious companies redesign before growth visibly cracks.
Now, the buyer counter here is important, and I want to give it its due. Agents may help enterprises avoid the next lock-in cycle instead of creating a new one. Sanofi cutting service now while deepening SAP might prove that buyers are getting better at playing vendors against each other.
Probably right in the short run. The next enterprise winner may not be the company with the most powerful model. It may be the company that makes switching feel reversible, signed new Azad while quietly owning more context over time.
Which is a very uncomfortable place to sit as a customer.
Very. Now, labor. Because this week's labor signal was not clean displacement. It was something more interesting.
OpenAI's Noam Brown said he would choose GPT 5.6 over a human research intern for most tasks. Instagram is reportedly shrinking product teams into 4 to 6 person pods. Microsoft announced $2.5 billion for 6,000 applied AI engineers. AWS announced $1 billion for its own forward-deployed engineering group.
So the replacement signals and the hiring signals are running simultaneously. That's the thing people miss. It's not one or the other.
The larger weekly pattern wasn't humans vanish. It was humans move to the layer where ambition, taste, judgment, and ownership get decided.
Clairvaux's blind model test showed that repeatable, taste-weighted tasks beat generic upgrade narratives. And Mosseri's lesson from Instagram, cheaper execution raises the value of deciding what matters.
But then Lenny's survey, this is the one that stings. Workers reporting productivity gains alongside higher burnout, weaker career optimism, and fear of doing more for the same pay.
More leverage creates more surface area to maintain. The ceiling goes up, and the room fills with unfinished doors.
And then the weekend added the winner versus builder dilemma. If dominant firms concentrate outcomes, joining the winner looks brutally rational. But if AI compresses incorporation, admin, and product building into hours, building alone looks newly possible.
Stansel's college basketball analogy framed career strategy as authorship, not just expected value. Do you join the program that already wins, or do you try to build a strange independent dynasty?
And what I find most unsettling about that framing is that both answers might be right simultaneously for different people.
Which is itself a new kind of ambiguity. AI doesn't only change tasks, it changes ambition design. What feels possible, what feels foolish, where high performers place their one life.
Okay, let's pull this together. Because the essay from this week introduced a character I want to name, the capacity translator.
The hospital CFO in the opening image, staring at a data center line item she cannot fully explain. The CTO says, we need compute. Security says, we need tighter logs. Legal says, the data can't move. Operations says, cut the old software bill. The board asks, will this make us money or are we buying fear?
And nobody in that room is debating whether AI is real.
They are debating whether the institution can carry the load.
That's the verification tax expanding, right? Not just, did the agent do the thing right? But was the whole capacity bet true?
Exactly. The verification tax, the burden placed on humans who must check, debug, and absorb AI outputs without matching authority, time, pay, or protections, now includes business case verification. You're not just reviewing the output, you're reviewing the premise.
And if the capacity translator gets real authority, she becomes one of the most important people in the AI economy. If she gets only the responsibility, she's the person blamed when the promise outruns the ledger.
That's the safety ceiling showing up again. The maximum competitive disadvantage a company can absorb for responsible AI before market pressure bends the principle. It's not just about model behavior anymore. It's about whether the total system bill is honest.
And the redundancy floor, your threshold for when AI makes workers permanently surplus, you're keeping it in monitor, not progressive.
Still in monitor because the body counts, to use Brandon's framing, aren't there yet in clean layoff form. But the machinery that could lower the floor is getting clearer. It looks like first you cut the software, then you cut the tasks, then you cut the teams. By the time a person loses a job, the decision was buried in a budget model 3 quarters ago.
That's a hard picture.
It is. And the open question for next week is the one I keep landing on. When AI gets cheaper per task but more expensive as a system, who inside the institution has the authority to say the total bill is too high?
That is the right question, and nobody has a clean answer yet.
Which means the next battleground isn't model quality. It's institutional legibility. Can the people inside these organizations actually see the full cost?
All right, here's where I land. The model still matters, but this week's strongest signal is that the model now depends on a much wider machine. Debt, depreciation, power, memory, cooling, talent, data rights, audits, provenance, IP trust, workflow integration, and institutional legitimacy.
And utilities aren't magic. They need capital discipline, physical inputs, public permission, and trust. The system can get smarter while the economics get uglier.
So the question that will actually decide the next map of AI isn't, can the model do it? More often now, yes. It's, can the system around the model carry the load?
That's the test. And this week showed us how many different kinds of load there are.
That's our week. The intelligence is becoming real. The infrastructure beneath it is becoming the bet. Until next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay curious.